And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, it's about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday evening, and this is October 23rd. It's program 124 in the WGN Radio Theater series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. She's here with a big smile on her face, which makes her dimples even deeper than they normally are. And then we have Elif Garris, our producer, in the booth. What's up, Elif?
Hey, not too much. How are you?
I'm good. I have three very good friends in the studio, too. We have Dave, Karen, and Barb, and they're here. And we are just going to have a party. We're just going to have a party tonight. We're going to play some classic radio shows, some Halloween shows. We've been doing it all month long. And you know what, Lisa? We're not bumped tonight.
I keep trying to talk, but you haven't stopped talking. You haven't breathed since we started. But I left you guys last night because we were only on for 1 hour, so I bailed.
Oh, yeah. You were inebriated.
Carl teased me, but I was fast asleep by 11, I'm just saying.
She was. She got pulled over, and the officer said, "Have you been drinking, lady?" She said, "Listen, officer."
Yeah.
I had too many martinis.
This is why I'm bubbly tonight, because I got a good night's sleep. I slept for 11 hours last night.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
I really did. So
wow.
I feel good tonight.
Very good. All right,
yeah.
So you're going to be ready to go?
I am ready to go.
All right, on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune into a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, starring Robert Cummings. Then it's another Robert Young, on Father Knows Best with Halloween Blues, good situation comedy show. And then Murder by Experts with Two Coffins to Fill, good mystery, because we're playing Halloween shows all the way through the end of October. All of this brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
We have a special edition of Cat's Pride Celebrity Scoop tonight. It is all about Hamilton the musical, because it opened this week in Chicago. I was lucky enough to see it this week. I will be talking about it later in the show, but here is your first Hamilton question.
So there's a play all about George Hamilton, the tan guy?
It's Alexander Hamilton.
Oh, gosh,
you were close.
Okay, good.
Okay, Hamilton is the story of America's founding father, Alexander Hamilton.
Oh, not with George Hamilton.
We are going to have a little music in the back, but that's okay. With book and music and lyrics. There we go.
Did they have rap music back then?
Hey, listen, this show has bridged the gap between rap music, as you call it, and theater. So we are looking for the person who wrote the book, music, and lyrics for Alexander Hamilton.
All right, 312-981-7200. That's the number to call. What do they win, Lisa?
They are going to win a $25 gift certificate for Luminati's, home of Chicago's best and my favorite deep dish pizza.
312-981-7200. And the question again, who wrote this? Who created it?
Who wrote Hamilton, the musical?
Okay.
Who wrote the book, music, and lyrics of Hamilton?
312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is show 124 of the WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah.
We're playing Celebrity Scoop with a special Hamilton edition. Let's play that music clip one more time.
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder.
So is that George Hamilton rapping there?
Not George.
Self-starter.
It's Alexander
Hamilton.
Put
his suntan lotion on and then started rapping? Is that
it's Alexander Hamilton. I can't wait to talk more about the show later in the broadcast, but right now we're going to go to the phone line and talk to Chris from Joliet. Hey, Chris. Chris?
Oh, wait a second.
Oh.
That's my fault. Sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
Chris?
Can you hear me now?
Yes,
I can. How are you?
Good. That was Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It certainly is. And I'm so excited because I think he's truly a genius, and I'm so excited to talk about the show. But, Chris, you are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check out one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnatis.com, and I hope that we'll be sharing that pizza real soon.
Hopefully I can get a ticket for that show. It's almost as hard as a Cubs ticket.
It's true. I know.
True.
It's true. But
I'll call George Hamilton.
But we're going to talk about why it's so great.
Yeah.
So I can't wait
to
do that.
Way to go, Chris. Thanks
buddy. A lot, Chris.
All right. It's time for our first classic radio show. It's Suspense. Suspense was on the air for like 20-plus years. They did nearly 1,000 radio broadcasts. Had all the best movie stars appearing on Suspense. And it was originally conceived as a potential radio vehicle for Alfred Hitchcock to direct. But then he got so busy directing movies that they just said, well, it was a good idea, but let's just bring in some of the best radio directors. But it was radio's outstanding theater thrills, and we have an episode for you now starring Robert Cummings in The Dead of Night. Let's go back to November 16th, 1944. Here's part one of Suspense.
Robert Cummings. Suspense is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Suspense. This is the man in black here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, who tonight from Hollywood bring you in his first appearance in a radio drama since his enlistment as United States Army Air Force flight instructor, one of the screen's favorite young players, Mr. Robert Cummings. And so with the strange events which befell the young Californian named Jimmy Barton in The Dead of the Night, and with the performance of Robert Cummings, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Helen and I had never been apart since our folks died. Never before that summer when I got a job up at Lake Arrowhead. She was supposed to go with me, wait on tables or something. It was to be our vacation. But at the last minute, she decided to stay in L.A. She figured her boyfriend, Steve, might be coming home on a furlough. I should have known better. My sister was such a kid, but I let her talk me into it. And I left her there alone. That was the beginning of the whole thing. That's when she met him, Phil Armstrong. If I hadn't gone away that summer, I guess Phil would be alive today. All during the time that I was gone, Helen didn't write much, and what letters I did get didn't seem natural. So I was anxious to finish my job and get home. I expected her to be at the bus station, but she wasn't. And when I got to the apartment, I could hear someone moving inside. The door was locked, so I knocked. Helen?
Who is it?
It's me. Well, open the door.
Oh, Jimmy. Just a minute.
Hi, honey. Since when have you taken to locking the door in the daytime? Helen, what did you do to yourself? Your face.
I fell, Jimmy. I fell and I hurt myself.
Well, your eye's swollen shut. Let me look at it.
Jimmy, I have something to tell you.
What are these suitcases doing here?
You and I are going away, Jimmy. We've got to get out of here. I packed everything.
We're going no place till you tell me what this is all about.
Well, Jimmy, while you were gone, I got married.
Married? You mean Steve was here on his furlough?
No, Jimmy, not to Steve.
But you were engaged to him.
Yes, I know. I got a letter from him right after you left. He married someone he met where he was stationed.
Oh, Helen. Gee, I
was pretty upset, Jimmy, and that's when I met Phil Armstrong.
Oh, but gee, I think you might have... I don't even know the guy.
No, neither did I. But I was unhappy.
Well, you just don't go off and marry someone you don't know.
Well, that's what I did, Jimmy. Now we've got to get out of here.
Huh? Well, but why?
Because there's been trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I'm afraid, Jimmy. He's terrible. He takes something. I don't know what. But sometimes he's crazy.
Helen.
Yes?
Your face. You didn't fall.
No.
He did that. I'll kill him.
He'll kill you. That's what I mean. That's why we've got to get away.
Well, you can get a divorce, can't you?
He threatened me if I even tried to get one.
We'll put him under a peace bond. We'll...
What good would a peace bond be, Jimmy, if he killed one of us?
So I let her talk me into running away. I guess I shouldn't have, but I knew that if I saw him after what he'd done to her... Well, anyhow, I'd saved my salary and I had some gas coupons. We didn't know where we were going, but we started out.
I don't know what he'll do when he finds I've gone.
Helen, don't you think we ought to go to the police?
Oh, I'm afraid, Jimmy. I know him. I know what he'd do if he found out we'd reported him.
But they'd protect us, Helen. They'd protect us.
But what if he got to us before they got to him?
And she looked so frightened, I thought it best to let her do it her way. We got to Santa Monica that night, and we stopped at a motel near the water. Well, a week slipped by, and Helen seemed to be forgetting. She didn't jump every time someone knocked at the door, and she began to get a nice tan. I managed to get a job. It was at McGuffey's Potluck Gallery in one of the shooting concessions on the pier. Then one night late, as I came home from work, I heard voices coming from our apartment. I knew who it was, and I knew that from what Helen had told me, it would be foolish for me to go in unarmed. So I ran back to the shooting concession. It didn't take long, but when I got back, the lights were out, and the sound of voices was gone. I tried the door. It was very dark. And then my foot struck something soft and heavy on the floor. I snapped on the switch, and the room was flooded with light, and I looked down into a dead man's face. It's funny how in the biggest, the most important, the most terrifying moments of your whole life, you remember little tiny insignificant things. I remember that I set my alarm. It was to go off at 5 o'clock. I'd set it to wake me up that afternoon. And a bird started to chatter outside as I stood there shivering with cold and terror, looking down at that dead man's face. Although I'd never seen him alive, I knew this was Phil, her husband. There was a deep gash over his eye, and the blood still flowed from it onto the floor. I stepped over him and I ran into the bedroom. Helen! Helen! But there was no one in the bedroom, nor in the kitchen. And then I heard the front door open.
Jimmy!
Close that door, Helen.
Oh, Jimmy!
Close it, do you hear me? Be quiet. Turn the lights out. Be quiet, I tell you.
Oh, Jimmy, what have I let you in for?
Stay where you are. Don't move, Helen.
Who is it?
I don't know. Keep quiet.
Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy, it's Mrs. Gordon.
Shh.
Is she... She's going to unlock the door.
Oh, just a minute, Mrs. Gordon. I'll get something on.
Jimmy, what's going on in there? All the tanks fit to cleaning.
Just some friends of mine, Mrs. Gordon. They were having a party. They're gone now.
Jimmy Barton, you should be ashamed of yourself. Now open this door. I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm not dressed. I was taking a shower.
Well, get something on.
Well, I'm tired. I just was going to bed.
Jimmy, I told you I wanted to talk to you. Now will you open this door?
She has a pass key, Jimmy.
All right, Mrs. Gordon. Just let me get some clothes on.
I'll give you 2 minutes.
I didn't know what to do. I knew she was determined to come in. Mrs. Gordon was a nosy old woman. She meant well. She'd taken it upon herself to mother Helen and me. She was always coming into the apartment with her pots of jam and her bowls of soup. I knew no matter what I said, nothing would stop her.
What'll we do, Jimmy?
We got about a minute left.
Helen, take him by the feet.
No.
Helen, take him by the feet.
It's no use. It's no use.
We started half-dragging, half-carrying him towards the bedroom. The rugs slipping along the floor as we moved. We'd just gotten into the bedroom, and then...
Time's up, Jimmy. And as long as your good mother isn't here to
to look after you. I'm going to myself.
We can't leave him here. She might come into the bedroom.
Quick, the bathroom.
Jimmy, where are you?
What if she comes in here?
Pull back those shower curtains.
Oh, Jimmy, we can't.
Don't argue. Pull them back.
Jimmy, I can't get his legs in.
Here, I'll double them up. There. Pull the curtains together, quick.
Jimmy, what's been going on in here? Why, look at my rugs. Has there been a fire?
Just a minute, Mrs. Gordon.
Jimmy, what's on this floor and on this gas heater? Is this blood?
Jimmy!
Get me a razor out of the medicine chest.
Here. What are you going to do?
Never mind. You stay here. I'm coming, Mrs. Gordon.
Well, just as I suspected. You've been fighting, and you've hurt yourself. Now let me see your hand.
Oh, it isn't bad, Mrs. Gordon.
Oh, no wonder you didn't want me to come in. Where's Helen?
She's out. She hasn't been here all evening.
Well, let's look at that hand.
Oh, it isn't bad, Mrs. Gordon, really.
You let me see that hand. Oh, there. Why, Jimmy, this is a bad gash. Have you disinfected it?
Yes, I have.
Well, let me bandage it for you.
No, but this towel's all right.
It's not all right. Where are your bandages and things? In the bathroom?
No. I mean, I don't have any.
Now, you're just saying that, Jimmy Barton, because you don't want to be bandaged. You're not fooling me. I'm going right into the bathroom and get
no,
some...
No, not the bath. I mean, I don't have any.
Well, I'll just see for myself.
No, Mrs. Gordon.
Jimmy, why, you drip blood all over this floor. Here, let's look in this medicine closet. Uh-huh. There, I knew it. Here's some tape and some gauze, too.
Mrs. Gordon, can't we just do this in the living room?
No, we'll do it right here. Now, here's some alcohol. Come on, put your hand over here.
We stood there, and she bandaged me, and I kept wondering where Helen had gone. And then I saw the shower curtain move slightly, and I knew. For a moment, I thought Mrs. Gordon had seen it, too.
Jimmy, just look at that shower curtain.
Yes.
Goodness, you smeared that with blood, too. Well, I'd better clean things up for you before Helen gets home. Why, you'll scare the life out of her.
Well, I'll clean it up, Mrs. Gordon. You've done enough. Thanks very much for taking care of this hand.
Well, all right. If you don't want me to. Now, you'd better get some sleep. I'll see you in the morning. Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, Mrs. Gordon.
Oh, Jimmy.
Shh, Helen.
I had to hide someplace. It was terrible.
I know. It was the only thing you could do.
Jimmy!
Yes?
Jimmy, I forgot to tell you that I'm having some painting done tomorrow. So you'll have to be out of here early. It's hard enough getting painters these days without making them wait for the tenants to get up, you know.
Yeah, all right, Mrs. Gordon. I'll be out first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, good night.
Good night.
I will have to get him out of here.
Yeah.
Where will we take him?
I don't know. I've got to think. Here, Helen, you try and get some rest.
Jimmy, let me go to the police. Let me tell them that I did it. Let me tell them what he was. They won't do anything to me.
No. You try and rest. What time is it?
It's about six.
Six. We've got 2 hours before the painters get here.
What are we going to do, Jimmy?
Let's see. So there's a car. No one will see us if we take him through the service porch into the garage.
And what?
I don't know, but that'll get him out of here anyway. I think I can do it alone, Helen.
Listen, Jimmy, we're in this mess because of me. I'm going to help you. I'll be ready in a minute.
All right. Good episode of suspense right here called The Dead of Night, starring Robert Cummings from 1944. We'll get back to it here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. Oh, we got some disco going here, Lisa.
Now,
would you dance with me?
I will not.
I brought my platform shoes.
We are going to segue into Halloween music next hour, so we've got some surprises in store.
This is Beep Beep. This is, who is it? Was this Donna Summer?
No.
Yes. Donna Summer.
Yes, that's what I meant, yes.
Bad boy. That's me. And you're bad girl.
Uh-huh. Speak for yourself.
Donna Summer, I love her. Boy, I tell you, it brings me back to my disco
dancing
days. used to wear those platform shoes. I was 5'4 with those platform shoes on, boy, I'll tell you.
When, what's changed?
I had my silk shirt, my chain. I still have a chain.
Your Italian horn.
I still got my chain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had an Italian horn, and I dated a girl for about 2 days, gave her the Italian horn, and she broke up with me and never gave me the horn
back.
And
you still haven't learned, have you?
Yeah, never gave me that. She's out there somewhere. She has my Italian horn.
I tease you about just that
all
the
time. If you're out there, I'd like my Italian horn back.
Bet you would.
All right, let's get back to suspense. The Dead of Night from 1944. Robert Cummings, here's the conclusion to Suspense.
When I went into the bathroom, the shower curtains were standing open. His legs had slipped from their cramped position. They'd pushed themselves into the room. He sat there with his head twisted down and his chin digging into his chest. I took a washcloth and it was awful. I wiped the blood off his face, just in case anyone saw us. They might think he was just sick. I tried to lift him, but I slipped, and his head made a hollow sound as it thumped down on the shower floor. Helen helped me get him into the luggage compartment of the car.
Where are we going, Jimmy?
Helen, won't you please stay in the apartment, please?
No, I couldn't. I'm going with you.
Helen, haven't you done enough?
I'm going with you. Too late now to wish that I hadn't. Where will we go?
To the pier, the Santa Monica Pier. Beyond the concessions, you can drive a car on the end there.
Lucky it's so foggy.
Yeah. What time is it?
5 of 7.
We'll have to act fast. This fog will be clearing soon. It'll be harder to get him out of this car. Now, you stay here. I can manage this alone this time.
Oh, I'll help you, Jimmy.
You stay here. Do you hear me?
All right, go ahead and hear me.
I'll go around the back. Keep your eyes open.
Yeah. Jimmy.
What?
Someone's coming.
Who is it?
I can't see. Jimmy, it's a policeman.
What?
It's a policeman. Jimmy.
Oh, it's all right. I know him. It's Red Davis. He's the beach patrolman. Hello, Red.
Hello, Jimmy. Say, when do you get your sleep? Didn't you close up after that swing ship dance last night?
Yeah, Red, but I couldn't seem to remember if I'd locked up the old shooting gallery, so I came over this morning to have a look around.
I see.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is my sister. Red, this is Helen. This is Red Davis.
How do you do? Hello. So you're an early riser, too, huh?
Yes, I...
Well, the fog's clearing up. It looks like we're going to get some sun today for a change, huh?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll be getting back. I think I'll try and catch a few more hours sleep. Well, so long.
Yeah, so long. Say, Jimmy.
Yeah?
Say, Jimmy, I have to take my wife over to the nursery today to pick up some plants and stuff, you know. And I don't have a trunk on my car. I wonder if you'll let me have yours.
Oh,
You have to drive me over to Malibu this afternoon, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'd forgotten.
You can drive her over in my car. How's that?
Well, you see...
that brother of yours thinks I'll wreck that beautiful car.
Oh, it isn't that, Red.
Okay, then I'll be over about noon and I'll leave my car for you till I get back, huh?
Well, I won't be home at noon, Red.
All right, I'll meet you at the entrance to the pier. How's that?
Oh, all right, Red. Well, so long.
Yeah, so long.
I just said you'd meet him, Jimmy.
Well, if I didn't, he'll go over to the apartment looking for us. And you don't want any policemen over there, do you?
Oh, no, of course not.
We've got to get out of here fast. As we drove along the ocean, the fog cleared up rapidly. It was almost 8 o'clock, and some kids were already out on the beach playing around. Then I saw a group of early picnickers. They were unloading their blankets, umbrellas, and things. I guess it was from them I got the idea, from seeing them.
Jimmy, your gas is pretty near on empty.
Yeah.
You got any more coupons?
No, they're all used up. We're going to have to do something soon.
I know, Jimmy.
We can't go back to the motel with the painters there. And we can't leave him in the car. Red's liable to see us and pin us down to using it. There's only one place left.
Where, Jimmy?
Helen, listen. I'm going to let you out of this car. You can't help me with what I've got to do now.
No, Jimmy, I'm staying with
you. Don't argue, Helen.
I'm not leaving you, Jimmy.
Get out of this car, do you hear me?
No.
I haven't time to argue with you.
Please.
Now get out.
I won't do it, Jimmy.
Yes, you will if I have to push you out.
Jimmy, you're hurting.
There. Now go back to the motel. Get off that running board, Helen.
I can't leave you alone, Jimmy. I want to help you.
I'm not blaming you for killing him, Helen, but now you've got to help me do as I say.
What, Jimmy, what?
I don't blame you for what you did. He deserved it. But now you've got to help me handle things.
Jimmy, you've got to let me...
Goodbye, Helen.
Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy, don't leave me! Jimmy!
I watched her out of the mirror. She kept calling me. I drove on as fast as I could. I knew what I had to do when I was one chance in a million. But I had to take it. And I didn't want her to be part of it. I could keep him on the beach that whole day. Then maybe I'd be able to get rid of him when night fell. I wanted to drive further along, but I was afraid I'd run out of gas. So I settled for a deserted strip of beach not far from the motel. I had my swimming shorts and a blanket and a towel in the car. And I got out. I looked around carefully. And then I opened the luggage compartment. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I started taking his clothes off. I managed to get my shorts onto him. Lucky we were pretty near the same size. And then I closed the door. And I went out onto the beach and I spread my blanket out on the sand. And then I went back for him. When there were no cars in sight, I carried him over to where I'd spread my blanket. And I placed him onto it face down with his hands folded over his head as though he were just sunbathing. Then I spread my towel out a short distance from him and I laid down on it. And I tried to look relaxed. People didn't start to arrive until about an hour later. And gradually, little groups of sunbathers started to form. He and I, we looked no different from the others. No one paid any attention to us. I was beginning to feel that everything was going to be easy once it was dark again. But...
Jimmy! I've been looking all over for you.
What? Oh, hello, Mrs. Gordon.
Where's Helen?
Isn't she in the apartment?
What time did you go out this morning?
Well, I couldn't sleep.
And... Well, didn't Helen come in at all last night?
Oh, yes, she did, but she left early, too. Said she was going into Los Angeles.
Oh, my. I was so worried about her. Well, the painters came, Jimmy, and everything's a mess. I think I'll sit down here with you a while. You're not with anyone, are you?
No, I'm not.
Goodness, I wish I'd brought along some oil. Looks like it's going to be a hot day. You know, these days that start off foggy are very deceiving.
Yeah, they are.
This is a real treat for me, Jimmy. I never get out on the beach. Think I'll have a nice day of rest for a change. Later we can get some sandwiches. The treat's on me.
Well, Mrs. Gordon, no, I hadn't planned on spending the day at the beach.
It'll be good for you, Jimmy. Not healthy for a boy your age to be working all night and sleeping all day.
But, Mrs. Gordon, you see, I...
Jimmy, do you know that man over there?
Which one?
Why, that one right there.
What? No, I don't know him.
Well, he's lying so still. His back's going to get an awful burn.
Yeah.
Well, do you suppose he's asleep? It isn't good to sleep in the sun, you know.
Mrs. Gordon, do you think that the painters will be finished by this afternoon?
Huh? Oh, well, I hope so. My, a person can get an awful burn in a day like this. You know, someone ought to speak to him.
Mrs. Gordon, wouldn't you like to go for a walk?
Oh, I'm not one for walking. You go ahead if you like.
Well, I...
Come on, Dick, pitch it over here.
Oh, those kids. You children, stop that. You're getting sand all over me.
Oh, sorry, lady.
No need to play here. There's a playground over by the pier. Now you just get away from here.
Don't pay no attention to her. She don't own the beach. Pitch it over here.
Oh, coming at you.
Uh-oh. You hit that guy on the beach.
There. Now see what they've done. They've hit that poor man. Now they'll get what's coming to them.
Mrs. Gordon, sure you don't want to go and get some sandwiches or something? I'll just stay
Not
here and...
Not until I see those two hoodlums get what they deserve. Shh. Quiet.
Gee, I'm sorry, mister. Could we have our ball?
Now, look at that. Ball's right in the crook of his arm. He's pretending he's asleep. He's not going to hand it to them. But just wait till they reach for it. He'll give them something besides their ball off.
Well, what are you waiting for, Dickie? It's our ball. Just take it.
Oh, hey, mister, could we have...
Go on, take it. Here, I'll get it. Thanks, mister. I got...
What's the matter? Gee, he's cold.
What'd you say?
He's cold, lady. His arm's like ice. I just touched it.
You probably hurt him.
A little ball like this couldn't hurt anybody.
Well, nevertheless, it did. Here. Now, let's have a look.
And then she started moving toward him. I knew it was useless to try and stop her. And then she reached over and put her hand on his back. And suddenly she was screaming.
Oh, oh, damn it! Damn it! This man is dead! He's dead! Look at him!
Before long, there was a crowd of people around us, and someone called the police. I wanted to run, but I knew that would be the wrong thing to do, so I just stayed there, numb-like, watching things. When the police came, they started questioning everybody. Mrs. Gordon was first.
Why, he'd been there all morning. I came early, and he was here already. Just like that. You know, with his face down. Just like he
was. Was there anyone else around when you arrived?
Around? Yes, Jimmy was here. He was here all alone with him. Weren't you, Jimmy?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you see, you were.
Doesn't anyone know this man? Do you know him? I told you kids to keep away from here now. Did you hear me?
We discovered him, didn't we? If it hadn't have been for us.
Yeah, and you don't even know a clue when you see one. Look at his fingernails.
What's that? Oh, the child's right, officer.
What's that?
Now just look for yourself.
Let me see that.
Yes.
It looks like powder. Something flaky. Are you sure none of you people around here recognize him?
Recognize him? Well, I've never seen him. Officer!
Huh?
Why, that blanket he's lying on. Why, it's from my motel. See, it's stamped right under where you moved his hand. Oh, dear. Look for yourself. See? It says Seaside Motor Cabins.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're sure he wasn't registered?
Why, I'm positive.
Is there anyone else around here from your hotel?
Jimmy, look.
Jimmy!
Here comes Helen. Look, she's crying.
Mrs. Gordon, I asked if there was anybody around here from your motel.
Huh? What's that? Yes, Jimmy Barton here. And that girl. You see, she's his sister. They've been with us for several weeks.
Jimmy. Yes. What have you got to say, Jimmy?
And suddenly everyone was looking at me. And at Helen as she ran towards us. And like a fool, I started to run too. In Helen's direction to ward her off. I didn't get far, however. Someone caught me by the arm.
Jimmy, I've been looking all over for you.
Don't say anything, Helen. Let me do the talking. Don't say anything.
Jimmy, when you forced me out of the car this morning, you said you didn't blame me for having killed him.
Helen, be still. Don't.
Jimmy, I didn't kill him. I thought you had. I was helping you get rid of him because I thought you'd done it.
I'm sorry, kid.
Helen, are you telling the truth?
I swear it, Jimmy. Phil and I were quarreling. He'd been taking something again. He was like crazy. And
this guy, Phil?
And I knew there'd be trouble when you came home from work. So I got out the back way and I went looking for you on the pier. When I couldn't find you, I went back to the motel and I found him on the floor. I thought you...
But Helen, why didn't you say so?
You didn't give me a chance, Jimmy. You just took it for granted that I did.
Well, but who did kill him, Helen?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Nobody killed him.
What are you talking about?
I went to the motel a while ago to wait for you. While I was there, I remembered about Phil last night. How strangely he'd acted, and how he hadn't been able to walk straight, and how he'd almost fallen several times while we were quarreling. And then I saw the gas heater, Jimmy. There was a sharp edge on the top of it with blood on it. He must have fallen. He must have.
Oh, but Helen, we've no way of proving that.
There was something else, Jimmy.
Yeah, what?
The wall above the heater was scratched. As though someone had clutched at it to save himself from falling. There might be fingerprints. There might be.
Oh, no, that's no... Wait a minute. Plaster! Hey, Red! That flaky stuff you found under his fingernails, that might have been plaster!
And it was. Well, that's about it. Everything checked back at the motel and the autopsy showed he was full of dope. But I guess it was really Mrs. Gordon who saved our necks for us. Besides talking so loud and so long that they'd probably acquitted us just to get rid of us, she did dig up a witness who'd heard Helen and Phil quarreling and who'd seen Helen leave alone after he threatened her. Well, everything's all right now. Helen and I are beginning to forget. But it's Mrs. Gordon who's making quite a nuisance of herself on the beach these days. As she goes along poking all the sunbathers and asking if they're sure they're all right. And so closes The Dead of the Night, starring Robert Cummings. Tonight's study in suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
All right, that is The Dead of the Night on Suspense from November 16th, 1944. In that cast, Walter Tetley, who played Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve, also Lorene Tuttle, Wally Mayer, and Joseph Kearns as the Man in Black. Hope you enjoyed Suspense. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Aleph?
Stop the things you do!
Is this some scary Halloween stuff? Doesn't sound scary to me.
It's I Put a Spell on You.
Oh.
Wait for it.
You put a spell on me, yes. You put a spell on me.
I'm waiting. That's good.
I like it.
You like it, Lisa?
I do.
What is this from?
Well, it's by the Screaming Jayhawkins.
Screaming Jayhawkins, sure.
And it was a request.
I have all his 16-inch transcription discs.
Yeah. It was a request from a dear listener.
Oh, very good. Wow.
This was a follow-up to his hit Yell.
Oh, was it, Roger?
Yeah, it was a
Roger
scream.
Knows all this stuff.
It goes from yell to scream to holler.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a progression.
Yeah.
When Roger says something, I believe him. You don't want to mess with Roger.
I like to mess with Roger.
Roger knows his stuff.
I like to mess with Roger.
All right, in this hour, it's a good comedy, a Halloween comedy called The Halloween Blues on Father Knows Best from 1953 with Robert Young. Then in our next hour, we'll tune into a good murder mystery on Murder by Experts called Two Coffins to Fill. So we have classic radio all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning here on a Monday morning. Happy Monday, Lisa.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to our listeners. And thanks to all of our listeners for staying up with us and tuning into our show. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This is our special Hamilton edition of Celebrity Scoop.
Street. Yeah, they renamed it after him, the Mercer Legacy.
Oh, it's so good.
Sure. And all he had to do was die.
So what musical did Lin-Manuel Miranda write the music and lyrics for that won 4 Tony Awards and opened on Broadway in 2008? If you get this answer correct and you're the first caller, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
All right, 312-981-7200. That's a number, 312-981-7200. Call us right now, win a pizza. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We have a special Hamilton edition of Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that music clip again from Hamilton.
You know Claremont Street? Yeah, they renamed it after him. The Mercer Legacy is secure.
That George Hamilton is quite the rapper. You know?
That's, yeah. We have Nancy on the line from Evanston. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I'm so glad you called in, and Carl's looking at me like I'm crazy, but I'm sure you know.
So I'm looking at you like I always do.
Like he always does. So you said, who's going to know, but you know, what musical Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote before Hamilton that opened on Broadway in 2008?
In the Heights.
In the Heights is right. Didn't you ever see In the Heights? Do you love In the Heights? Nancy, do you like that musical?
We saw it on Broadway.
Yeah, it's a great show. And did you see it with Lin-Manuel Miranda as it was Navi?
Yes, we did.
See?
Wow.
Good for you. Congratulations. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best. Carl is very impressed, by the way, Nancy.
Very impressed.
So am I. You can check out one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much for calling in and for letting Carl know that some people do appreciate theater.
Yeah, and we also saw Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton on Broadway also.
Oh, you wow. did. Yeah, my son saw it there. I didn't, but certainly I felt lucky enough to have seen it here at the Private Bank Theater. So,
oh, yes.
Thank you, Nancy.
Way to go, Nancy.
Okay.
Enjoy
Take
that
care.
Pizza. Thanks for listening to the show. All right, it's time for Father Knows Best, a good Halloween show. Yes, Father Knows Best was on the radio before it became a television show, and Robert Young is really the only actor that was on both. They had a completely yeah. different radio cast as the television cast. Robert Young did both shows. This is from October 29th, 1953. It's Halloween, and Dad doesn't want the kids trick-or-treating, which makes everybody very blue. So let's tune this in, part one now of Father Knows Best.
Mother, are Post 40% Bran Flakes really the best-tasting cereal of them all?
Well, your father says so, and Father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by Instant Sanka, the delicious coffee that lets you sleep, and Post 40% Bran Flakes. Mother, next time you're choosing a cereal, remember, new Post 40% Bran Flakes give your family all the important keep regular benefits of bran in a cereal with a delicious new magic oven flavor. Insist on Post Bran Flakes, the cereal preferred and eaten by far more people than any other Bran Flakes. This weekend, get Post 40% Bran Flakes in the new family size 15-ounce package. They're good, and so good for you. When brown October rolls around, the air is crisp and clear, and hearts of men are happy in the twilight of the year. In Springfield, in the white frame house on Maple Street, the Andersons are at breakfast. It's a beautiful day, bright and brisk and... Well, it starts out as a beautiful day anyway, like this.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Daddy.
What a day. What a beautiful, wonderful day.
Mother.
Just a moment, Betty. Here's your cereal, dear.
Thank you. Margaret, look at that sun. Look at that sky. Smell those golden leaves burning in the sunlight. Have you ever in your whole life seen a more beautiful day?
No, dear. Drink your milk, Kathy.
Take a breath of that air. Clear, cold, clean as a whistle. They can talk all they like about spring. This is the time of year that puts zip into a man. Pass the cream and sugar, Betty, please.
But if you don't hurry, you're going to be late.
Okay, Mom. I tell you, it's weather like this that made America the greatest country in the world, that keeps America on its toes. It's weather like this that stirs up your blood, makes you want to get out and do things, climb a few mountains, jump over a few trees, makes you glad just to be alive.
Mother, now?
All right, dear. Go ahead.
Father, I need $5.
Margaret, why is it that every time I come to the breakfast table, somebody suddenly discovers that he's short $5? Doesn't anybody in this family ever have enough money?
But Father...
Betty, let your father finish. Go ahead, dear.
When I was a boy, I had to stick to my allowance. If I needed an extra quarter, I had to go out and work for it. I couldn't just... wait until my father was in a good mood and then announce that I needed $5. Money didn't grow on trees when I was a boy, and it doesn't grow on trees now. I give each of you an allowance, a very generous allowance, I might say.
Ha! Kathy, be quiet.
And unless there's an emergency of an unusual and unforeseen nature, I expect every member of this family to get along on the funds allotted to him. Now, is that understood? All right.
Mother?
All right, dear.
Father, I simply have to have $5.
Betty, I just finished telling you... Why do you need $5?
For a wig.
A wig? What's the matter, getting a little thin on top?
Father. It's for her costume, Jim. She's going as Marie Antoinette.
She's going where as Marie Antoinette?
To Janie Liggett's. Janie's having a costume party tonight.
Doesn't Janie Liggett ever do anything but give parties? What's the matter with that girl?
Dear, it's Halloween, and she just thought...
Janie Liggett can find more excuses for a party than Elsa Maxwell's press agent. And why this sudden affection for Marie Antoinette? Why doesn't she go as Daniel Boone? I've got an old coonskin hat she can have for nothing.
I'm going to be a devil.
Now, that's more like it, you see. Kathy won't even need a costume.
Mommy.
Kathy, darling, your father was only joking.
He hurt my feelings.
Say, Dad.
Since when is Janie Liggett inviting Kathy to her parties? That's something new, isn't it?
Dad.
Kathy isn't going to Janie's party, Father. It's a costume ball for grown-ups, not infants. Mommy.
Oh, Betty, I wish you wouldn't say things like that. All right, Kathy, stop making faces and drink your milk.
Well, she hurt my feelings, too.
Say, Dad.
Kathy just said she was going to be a devil. Is somebody else giving a party?
No, dear. Kathy and her little friends are going to play trick-or-treat.
We're going to ring doorbells and get candy.
I don't think that's a good idea at all. Bunch of hoodlums going around threatening people into giving them ammunition for a stomachache. Kathy, you're not going to ring any doorbells, and that's final.
Gee whiz.
Say, Dad.
Bud, will you please stop interrupting? Talk, 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 and you never say anything.
Gosh, nobody gives me a chance.
All right, what is it?
Well, I have to leave for school right away, and I'm going out with the fellas tonight, so could I please have a dollar?
No. Now, stop interrupting and let me finish what I was saying.
But, Dad...
For the last time, Bud, no. You get your allowance on Saturday, and it's got to take care of you for the week. You've got to learn to make your money last.
But, Dad...
Jim, this is Saturday.
That makes absolutely no difference. If Bud thinks... Oh. That is, isn't it?
Gosh, Dad, all I want is my allowance.
Well, why didn't you say so? Here, don't spend it all in one place.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Bud, are you going to a party tonight?
No, not exactly. Joe Phillips bought a Zoom buggy, and we all thought we'd just sort of cruise around for a while.
Well, I've got a better idea. We'll celebrate Halloween in a safe and sane manner by going to the movies.
Aw, gee.
Gee whiz, Dad.
Jim, I don't want to make an issue
Margaret,
of it, but...
I will not have the children running around the streets after dark. You know I don't approve of it.
I know, dear. But last night the paper said there was an epidemic of measles in Springfield, and I just wondered if...
All right, then, we'll stay home. I have no objections.
Holy cow. Everybody else can go out on Halloween.
I hope I get the measles. That's what I hope. I hope everybody gets the measles.
Oh, Kathy, you don't mean that. Your father is only doing what he feels is best.
You don't have to apologize for me, Margaret. I'm not going to have my children acting like a bunch of juvenile delinquents.
Father, you still haven't told me. May I have $5?
When I was a boy, we had fun on Halloween. We weren't a menace to the community. We did all sorts of things like...
Taking the gates off fences.
Taking the gates off fences.
Letting the air out of people's tires.
Letting the air out of people... We did no such thing.
Well, you were certainly blamed for it.
I was framed, and you know it. Well, I wasn't anywhere near the... I was, Halloween was a festive occasion for the entire family. We spent the evening together, bobbing for apples, drinking apple cider, biting an apple on a string.
You're sure lucky somebody invented apples.
Very funny. Big joke.
Father, if you'd only tell
Betty,
me...
Betty, the phone's ringing.
Oh, all right. Mother, tell him how important it is.
Jim, Betty really has her heart set on it.
Oh, I'll let her have the money, you know that. Why does she have to figure out such elaborate costumes? $5 for a wig. Say, Margaret, I haven't had any breakfast yet.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. How would you like some nice poached eggs this morning?
Oh, I don't care anything at all.
It won't take a minute.
Now look, Bud and Kathy. There's no need to act as though the world had caved in. We'll have a lot of fun all by ourselves.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, we used to have fun together all the time. Don't you remember? We'll play games, listen to the radio.
Some fun.
Well, of course, if you'd rather go to bed right after dinner. Who is it, Betty?
Janie Liggett. And I don't need the $5.
What is it, dear? Is anything wrong?
Oh, no, everything's fine. Janie's sister has the measles, and the whole thing is called off.
Oh, that's too bad, Betty. But I'm sure someone else will have a party that you can go to.
Oh, that Janie's sister. With 365 days to get the measles, she has to pick Halloween.
Margaret, how would you like to give a Halloween party?
Oh, Jim, there isn't time. Well, Halloween is tonight,
and I mean a big party. I mean just a small, old-fashioned Halloween party, the kind we used to have years ago.
Oh, I don't know, dear. We haven't made any preparations. There isn't a thing in the house.
Well, you've got all day, and anyway, what do you need? couple of dozen donuts, a gallon of apple cider, and you're all set. What do you say, Betty?
Oh, I suppose so.
That's what I like, spirit, enthusiasm. How about you, Kathy?
You mean just us?
Well, no. Suppose we invite some friends. Each of you may have two guests.
Hey, that'll be all right. How about that, Betty?
I worked for 3 weeks on that costume, and now I'll wind up in my own cellar.
It's not a cellar, Betty. It's a playroom.
Well, it's a cellar to me.
Yes, sir, we'll have lots of fun. Good old-fashioned fun and good old-fashioned refreshments. Donuts and cider, popcorn and candy, apples and nuts, chestnuts, walnuts, peanuts. How about it, Betty?
Can I invite Ralph and Billy Smith?
Sure, invite anybody you want. How about asking Janie Liggett?
She can't go anywhere. The whole house is quarantined.
Quarantined? For the measles?
I told you last night, Jim, the epidemic is really becoming serious.
Oh, well, we won't worry about it now. Let's finish our breakfast. And tonight, say, we could even have a square dance.
Father, could we really?
Well, I should say. Didn't you know I was the best square dance caller in Springfield? Oh, swing that gal from Arkansas. She ain't been swung since way last fall. Then cross the hall and swing Grandma. And all turn around and swing Sally Gooden. Margaret!
I'm in the dining room, Jim.
Margaret, I met Hector Smith on the way home, and I... Holy jumping Jehoshaphat. What's that?
What's what, dear?
All that stuff on the table. What did they do, move the market up here?
Jim, after all, if you're going to have people in for a party...
Well, that's a relief. I thought maybe you'd ask them to stay for the winter. 6, 8... Holy smoke, 10 dozen donuts?
12, dear. The children took 2 boxes downstairs.
Margaret, why? 144 donuts?
Well, Jim, when you have to feed 22 growing children...
22? I told them to invite 6. How did it become 22?
Oh, like Topsy, I guess. It just grew.
6 gallons of cider, 5 pounds of popping corn, 12 quarts of milk, 4 cases of soda pop, 6... Margaret, where are they?
The children? Oh, they're down in the playroom, fixing the decorations.
Decorations? What decorations? I asked them to get 6 kids to duck for apples. Who said anything about decorations?
Well, the playroom did look a little bare, and they just thought
it was supposed to be a simple little party, just a few kids. That's what I told Hector. And now look.
Jim, you didn't invite the Smiths.
Well, sure, but I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. And Hector just had his teeth pulled, and he looked kind of lonesome.
Jim, you know that Elizabeth doesn't fit into a thing like this. She'll spend half the night bragging about her Mayflower Stuyvesant ancestors. She'll make us feel as if she's slumming.
Well, I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. I told them they could ask 2 guests apiece. That's all I said.
Well, Betty couldn't ask Marion Swift without asking Grace Russell. And they both had dates,
Margaret,
so...
I want you to be perfectly honest and truthful. If we had spent a quiet evening at the movies, wouldn't it have been worth a simple case of measles?
That's the first portion of Father Knows Best from October 29th, 1953, Halloween Blues, starring Robert Young, and we'll get back to it in a few minutes. Folks, you only have about another week to get 12 episodes of Suspense for half price, normally digitally downloaded for $19.99. You can get 12 episodes of Suspense for only $9.99. And if you want 12 episodes of Inner Sanctum Mysteries, normally $19.99, yours for only $9.99 this month. Or you can get all 24 episodes for only $14.99 via digital download right to your listening device. Just go to, WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. I think it's up there, right?
Yeah, it's there.
Hear the fear, Lisa.
I hear it.
12 episodes of Suspense. 12 episodes of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. All right, we're listening to Father Knows Best. This is a Halloween show. It's not a mystery, though. It's a comedy. We are playing one comedy each.
Well, our listeners love the comedies. And do they? When we don't play a comedy, we hear
about
it. We get
in a lot of trouble.
We do.
Our listeners give us a spank through the text.
We want to keep everyone happy.
They spank us.
Which is impossible.
Yeah, we don't want to be spanked. We want to play what they want to hear.
How do you know?
Including
sorry, just
Father
kidding.
Knows Best.
Just kidding. That's going to go on the inappropriate
That's going
reel,
on the inappropriate Nick DiGilio reel. All right, it's back to the conclusion now. Father Knows Best.
It's a gay evening in the white frame house on Maple Street. In the basement playroom, the children are raising a veritable tidal wave as they duck for apples. The teenagers are dancing to their young hearts' content. And upstairs in the kitchen, the adults, well, they're not doing so well.
Elizabeth, I give you my word of honor, I didn't mean to do it.
Hector Smith, don't you dare to speak to me again, not as long as you live.
Jim.
Oh, come on, Elizabeth, it isn't that bad.
I've never been so mortified in my entire life. Not in my entire life.
Elizabeth, this is cold. Let me put it on. It'll make you feel so much better.
Oh.
You got a piece of beefsteak, Margaret? That's good for a black eye, too.
Oh. How will I face my friends? What can I tell them?
Why don't you just tell them the truth? You were biting an apple on a string, and you zigged when you should have zagged.
Really, Jim? The humor of the situation escapes me completely.
Sure, you can't see your shiner. Oh, Elizabeth, it's a pip.
To think that I, a Stuyvesant on my mother's side, should come to this.
Elizabeth, if you'll just let me...
You keep away from me, you monster.
Well, I thought you wanted me to let go of the apple.
You planned the whole thing, Hector Smith.
Mother! Elizabeth, please put this against your eye. It'll help, really. Yes, Betty?
There isn't any more cider.
Well, send Bud up. We have another gallon up here.
Okay.
I told Hector in the first place I didn't want to come. A children's party, imagine. Me, Elizabeth Smith, at a children's party.
Well, you were having a pretty good time before it happened, Liz.
Jim, would you please not call me Liz? You know how I loathe that name.
Jim.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Where's the cider, Mom? Betty said you had some more.
It's right here next to the table, dear.
Okay. How's your eye, Mrs. Smith?
Oh, it's not well, Bud. It's not well at all.
Why, that sure was funny. You should have seen the look on your face.
Bud.
All right, Bud. Take the cider and beat it.
Some party, huh, Dad? Yeah, boy. What a brawl.
Leave it to my son. He always manages to say just the right thing at just the wrong time.
Mommy.
Just a minute, Kathy. Dear, see what Kathy wants, will you please?
Oh, probably another donut if I know Kathy. Don't go away, Heck. I'll be right back.
Okay, Jim. Elizabeth, maybe if I went out and bought a piece of steak or something...
Don't you come near me. Don't you even touch me.
What's the matter, Kathy? Did they run out of donuts downstairs?
Daddy, is it all right if I go to bed? I'm awful tired.
Well, I guess so, dear. Aren't you having a good time?
I don't know. I feel sleepy, and I hurt all over.
Well, Kathy, why don't you... Margaret!
Yes, Jim?
Could I see you for a minute, please? Why don't you lie down on the couch, Kathy? Mommy will be here in just a second.
All right, Daddy.
Jim, you know how upset Elizabeth is. Did you have to... Why, Kathy, what is it?
I'm sleepy, Mommy. I want to go to bed.
She said she didn't feel well. She hurts all over.
Jim, call Dr. Simmons.
Oh, Margaret, there's no reason to get all excited. You
Jim,
know.
Will you please call Dr. Simmons?
All right, all right.
You're going to be all right, darling. Mommy and Daddy won't let anything happen to their little girl. Jim, please hurry.
Well, I have to find his number, don't I? Oh, here it is. 3890. 3890. H-U-3-8-9-0.
Tell him she has a slight fever.
All right. She has? Oh, hello, Dr. Simmons. This is Jim Anderson. Oh, fine, thank you. Doctor, it's... yes, she's fine, too, thank you. Doctor, I... Well, they're fine, except Kathy. She doesn't feel very well. Yeah, she says she's very tired. Uh-huh.
Jim, tell him about the fever.
Margaret says she has a fever. Oh, it does? I see. Not for an hour, huh? You couldn't possibly make it any sooner than that. All right, Doctor. We'll put her to bed right away. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. In the meantime, I'll send all the kids home. Your what? Your what? Oh, no, Doctor. Dr. Simmons, you can't do a thing like that. It isn't human. Dr. Simmons. Dr. Simmons. Dr. Simmons.
Jim, is it measles?
That's what he thinks. And Margaret, we'll all be quarantined for a week.
Now, Margaret, you just leave everything the way it is and go up to Kathy. Go on now. Shoot.
Elizabeth,
I said shoot. I've got two perfectly healthy men here to help me, and we've got a lot of things to figure out.
Go ahead, dear. Kathy will feel better if you're with her.
But, Jim, there are so many things to do, and all these children...
Well, we'll figure it out, honey. You go on up to Kathy.
Margaret, you know you're not doing anybody any good down here.
No, I guess I'm not. I'll go upstairs, but please call me if you need any help.
All right, dear, we will.
Now...
Jim, I didn't want to say anything while Margaret was here, but what are we going to do with those kids?
I know what I'd like to do with them.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they got laws against the most sensible things.
If you two great brains are through with your little jokes, we'll get down to work.
Elizabeth, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen you this way. I mean, with your sleeves rolled up and your hair let down. It looks good.
Well, thanks.
She'd look even better without that shiner.
You and I will go into that later, dear. In the meantime, let's see now. 22 children and 4 adults.
Mm.
That means sleeping space for 26. How many beds do you have?
5, without Kathy's.
Hmm. Be a little crowded, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's always a couch.
Well, we have 4 beds, including the one in the guest room, so that makes 9.
Wait a minute. You're not going to all the trouble of bringing 4 beds over here, are you?
Well, gosh, Jim, they certainly won't do anybody any good in our house.
We can't expect those children to sleep on the floor. Not for an entire week. It'd be criminal.
But all that trouble and inconvenience...
Jim, they have a wonderful new invention called the telephone. Hector is going to use it in the morning and call the moving company. Right, Hector?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Tell them where to pick up a key and have them bring all the beds over here.
Right.
Then tell them to empty the linen closet. We're going to need every bit of linen in the house before we're finished.
Right.
Sheets and pillowcases and towels and everything. Do you have that?
Right.
That's a doorbell.
Right. Go ahead, Jim. It's probably the doctor.
Oh, yeah. Look, heck, don't do anything until I get back.
Don't worry about us, Jim. We got everything under control.
I don't know. You learn the strangest things about the strangest people at the strangest times. Oh, hello, Dr. Simmons.
Hello, Jim. Kathy upstairs.
Yes, doctor, I'm sure it's nothing serious, but if you think there's anything...
You stay here.
But, doctor, don't you think I'll...
Enough trouble with mothers. Can't stand fathers.
Well, the least he could do is let me... After all, she is my daughter, and I've got as much right to be there as...
Hey, what did Doc say, Jim? Anything more than measles?
He wouldn't even let me go upstairs. Fine doctor he turned out to be.
Jim, I think we've got everything arranged. We'll have to sleep in shifts, but at least everyone will get a good 8 hours rest and a comfortable bed.
No, that's fine, Elizabeth, fine.
We're going to put all of our beds and linen in the playroom so we don't get things mixed up. And then we'll make that the boys' dormitory.
Elizabeth, this is no time to bother Jim with anything like that.
Hector, the less Jim thinks about Kathy, the better it'll be. Now sit down, Jim, and drink this while it's hot.
Oh, thank you very much, Elizabeth. I don't know how to thank you and Hector enough.
Oh, poppycock. What are friends for if they can't help out once in a while? Now, are you going to sit down, or do I have to knock you down?
You, better sit down, Jim. She can get pretty rough.
Yeah, I'm sure she can, Heck.
The kitchen. That's where they generally administer to the needs of the suffering father.
Doctor, is she all right?
Hello, Hector. Mrs. Smith. Well, what happened to you?
I ran into an apple. Doctor, is Kathy all right?
Of course she's all right. I just wish they'd invent a gadget to let parents know the difference between measles and a good old-fashioned bellyache.
What?
She didn't need a doctor. She needed a stomach pump. How about a glass of cider?
Well, really?
Wait a minute. You mean she just had an upset stomach?
Jim, that stomach was so stuffed nothing could upset it.
But she had a fever. Margaret said so.
You'd have a fever, too, if you'd eaten 3 boxes of donuts.
Probably ate the boxes, too.
Dr. Simmons, You mean that this whole business of quarantine was unnecessary?
That's right, unless you consider a human tapeworm contagious.
Well, I'd better send all those kids home.
Jim Anderson, I certainly hope that you'll provide the proper degree of punishment for that child of yours.
Elizabeth.
Just a minute, Elizabeth. Kathy didn't do this intentionally. She's only 9 years old and she ate too much. Now, what's so horrible about that?
Now that I think of it, it was she who suggested that I bite into that apple.
Elizabeth, she just wanted you to have a good time.
Well, I had a good time, but this wasn't it. Hector, are you going to take me home, or do I have to drag you?
All right, dear, all right. Good night, Jim. I'm sorry it wasn't the measles.
Thanks, Heck, and thanks for everything.
Say goodbye to Margaret for us.
Okay, good night, Heck.
Good night, Doc.
Good night, Hector. You know, Jim, there's just one very good reason why I never got married. Women.
Oh, it isn't that bad, Doc.
No, but I'm too old to fence with them. They change too fast. I like something you can count on. Like a good, faithful dog.
Well, you can count on Kathy. It's always the wrong way, but you can sure count on it.
Once again, the Andersons are at breakfast, and once again, the day is bright and clear. This time, however, there's an air of grim foreboding in the breakfast nook, a suspicion of dark, dire things to come.
Children, when your father comes to the table, please try not to upset him.
Well, gosh, we didn't do anything.
I know, dear. I mean, I know you think you didn't do anything, but please be careful anyway.
Creepers, it was certainly a long party, wasn't it, Mother?
Yes, dear. Kathy, sit up straight. Your father's coming now.
Oh, I'm scared.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Bob.
What a day. What a beautiful, wonderful day.
How are you this morning, Kathy? Feeling better?
Yes, Daddy. I feel fine.
Jim, do you feel all right?
Never felt better in my life. Oh, say, here's something I want to show you. Found it in the paper this morning. Most wonderful bit of philosophy I've ever heard. It's called Formula for Contentment, and it's very simple. All it says is this. Just think how happy you'd be if you lost everything you have right now and then got it back again. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Peaceful home, three wonderful children, a lovely wife. You know, Margaret, I'm a very lucky guy.
Yes, dear, and speaking for the children and myself, I'd say we're very lucky, too.
Once a year, you have the chance to make one contribution toward all the services of the Community Chest. Give now. Give generously. Help your Community Chest serve the health, welfare, and recreational needs of all America and of our servicemen and women here and abroad. Join us again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson. Until then, good night and good luck from the makers of Post 40% Bran Flakes, the cereal preferred and eaten by far more people than any other Bran Flakes, and Instant Sanka, the delicious coffee that lets you sleep. In our cast were Rhoda Williams as Betty, Gene Vanderpyle, Ted Donaldson, Helen Strome, Eleanor Audley, Herb Vigran, and Arthur Q. Bryan. Calcium is essential to a child's growth.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps build strong, sturdy bones.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps build good, strong teeth.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Yes, a one-ounce serving contains one-third of your daily calcium needs. Serve your children calcium-enriched post-wheat meal. Kids love that nut-like flavor. Wheat meal cooks instantly. Get new post-wheat meal with more calcium than any other cereal, hot or cold. Father Knows Best was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. This is Bill Foreman speaking.
Tonight, play Truth or Consequences on the NBC Radio Network.
That was quite an interesting commercial for calcium there at the end of the show, wasn't it, Lisa?
What was interesting about it, Carl?
Well, all those voices and calcium, yeah, the calcium, that's very good, yeah.
They were talking about the nut whey wheel
protein. Wow, yeah.
What was the cereal that has the calcium in it? It was it sounded like a cream of wheat type cereal,
know.
I think.
Yeah. But that's that was a radio episode of Father Knows Best. Of course, it was became a huge hit on television. Radio, it did okay. But on television, it really flourished on TV. October 29th, 1953, Halloween Blues with Robert Young and a great cast of supporting characters on it. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. All right, Lisa. Wait a minute. I have a live read, I think. Do I? Yeah, tonight. A Chicago family home destroyed by fire, so why does the insurance company refuse to pay? WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
We're back with WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop, Hamilton's special night. Let's hear one little clip from Hamilton the musical.
Two Virginians and an immigrant walk into a room, diametrically opposed foes.
Oh, just hearing the music, I get all excited. I'm going to start joining
lottery
every day. Let's talk to Deanna from Chicago. Hi, Deanna.
I get all excited.
Hi.
Help us out here. Hamilton was inspired by the biography Alexander Hamilton, written by who?
Ross Chernow
is
wow.
Right.
Gosh,
she's
we have
a winner.
Smart listeners.
I'm telling you, Deanna, I'm so excited for you, and we're
Deanna,
happy.
Deanna, you're very smart.
You're very
smart. I would
smart.
Have never known that.
Am I going to get tickets to the play?
No,
I'm sorry. I wish I could give you
tickets
to the play.
I know.
But we will give you a pizza.
How's that?
How about a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's? Yeah, exactly. Check out one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations online and loumelnatis.com. Thank you so much for calling in and for listening, and we hope that you will ultimately have the opportunity to see Hamilton here in Chicago.
Me too. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye, Deanna. Thank you for calling in. All right, Lisa Wolf, you ready for a good mystery now?
I sure am, Carl.
All right. Let me tell you a little bit about Murder by Experts. It was a mystery series, came to radio in 1949 and ran just a couple seasons to 1951. The hosts throughout the series were John Dixon Carr and Brett Halliday. These were good mystery writers, famous mystery writers. Now, the stories were written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. They were the guys that brought us The Mysterious Traveler, The Sealed Book, and The Strange Dr. Weird. This was a series produced and broadcast from New York. The series featured radio adaptations of mystery stories by masters in the field, and it had New York's best supporting actors, Lawson Zerbe, Carl Weber, Roger DeCoven, Maurice Tarplin, and others. And I love this series. It's a great series. Not a lot of them in existence. We have about maybe 10 episodes in our library, and this is a good one. It's called Two Coffins to Kill, and it stars a fellow Carl.
Is it To Kill or To
Fill? I'm sorry, To Fill.
To Fill.
Two Coffins to Fill. It has a fellow Carl as the star, Carl Weber, although he spells it with a K.
Right.
Yes.
Like, what?
What? And good cast in this. Let's go back to July 4th, 1949, for Two Coffins to Fill on Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. This time, our guest expert is the noted mystery novelist, Kelly Roos. From the innumerable thrillers he has read and enjoyed, Mr. Roos has chosen a story by Robert Foster. To quote Mr. Roos, the story is a fascinating study of an ambitious and corrupt man venturing into the unknown and being caught in a whirlpool of violence and death. And now we present Carl Weber in Two Coffins to Fill. The scene, Nick's Place, a popular roadhouse on the West Coast. It's early evening, and the dimly lit cocktail lounge is empty, save for the bartender and a couple in a corner booth.
Roger, we can't go on like this.
Why not, darling?
I'm tired of meeting you at discreet places, of seeing you only when you can get away from your wife.
Just have to be patient, Eve.
Patient? It's already a year. How long do you think I'll go on waiting for you?
What would you have me do?
Leave her. Forget about the money. We can get along.
On what? Oh, no, Eve.
What do you think you'll get from her?
I have plans. It'll take time, but I'm very patient.
Well, I'm not. I can't go on waiting, Roger. I won't.
I'm sorry, Eve. Another drink?
Nothing affects you, does it, Roger? War, famine, or love? You're a man with only one weakness, money.
Why is it that women can never break off without creating a scene?
Why, you arrogant... What a fool I've been. All right, Roger, I'll break off without creating a scene. Goodbye, Roger.
I'll have another, Steve, and put a dash of bitters in it.
Hello, Thornton. Your friend left in a hurry.
You're quite observant, Al.
I'm a student of human nature. Nick's having a game in the back tonight. Interested?
A game?
Poker.
Yes, since my date's walked out on me, I'll play a few hands. Tell Nick I'll be there. It's amazing how one small weakness can disrupt an otherwise orderly and well-thought-out plan. My wife Frida's first husband left her with a manufacturing plant and holdings amounting to something like $4 million. That's a comfortable sum of money, and I'm a man who likes comfort, or I wouldn't have married Frida. She was 40 and tired, and no bargain special in the marriage market. But I had plans. Plans that didn't include murder. Not then. I was a patient man. Patient until a weakness occurred, and I spent the night playing cards in a back room at Nick's place. That night cost me $30,000, all on my signature. Perhaps that's why Nick's gun-happy friend Al was so insistent a couple of weeks later. I was sitting at the bar in Nick's.
Thornton.
Yes?
You busy?
That depends.
Nick wants to see you in his office.
Wants to see me about what?
I didn't ask him.
I'll tell him I'll drop back after I finish this drink.
Make it now.
What?
I said now, Thornton.
All right. All right, let's have it your way.
Hello, Roger.
Good evening, Nick.
Sit down.
Before I sit down, let's have an understanding. I don't like the idea of your man here pushing me around with a gun.
A gun?
I kept it covered, Nick.
And we don't want any trouble, Al.
Nobody's seen me.
Don't mind Al, Roger. He takes his work seriously.
Perhaps someone will take him seriously someday.
Al's a good boy. For a price. Right, Al?
That's right.
I'm not interested in the merits of your bodyguard.
Sit down, Roger. You're getting red in the face. Al, mix us a drink, will you?
Sure, Nick. Coming up.
Roger, what about that 30 grand you owe me?
I'll pay you when I get it.
That's a poor bet, Roger. I've been checking on you.
What do you mean, checking on me?
You're a punk. That wife of yours has got all the dough. You haven't got a dime.
My personal affairs don't concern you, Nick.
I'm a right guy. I've never given a right guy a bum break yet. About that, Al?
That's right.
I'm a gambler, Roger. When I lose, I pay off. When I win, I aim to collect.
Oh, before you start laying down the law, Nick, that happens to be an uncollectible debt.
Yeah. I got a lawyer, too. When you say uncollectible, Roger, you want to figure all the angles.
What angles?
Al, what do you figure this guy's worth?
About 30 grand.
Which way?
Either way.
What are you talking about? What do you mean, either way?
Tell him, Al.
Sitting up or lying down?
Now, see here, Nick.
I can see, Roger. And I want you to see me tomorrow. With 30 grand.
I said I'd pay you.
Tomorrow.
I don't know if I can get it that soon.
I don't like punks like you, Roger. You're crummy. With all that dough you're tied up to, you're still crummy.
I'll do the best I can.
When I said tomorrow, Roger, I wasn't kidding. Was I, Al?
You sure wasn't, Nick.
I didn't like Nick calling me crummy. Whatever I wasn't Nick's kind of tramp. I was furious with myself for becoming so stupidly involved with him in that card game. And Frida had me tied down as if I were a child, making me account for every nickel. If I'd had her then, I could have killed her. I'd had to have a talk with Frida. When I got home, she was in the library.
You're late, Roger.
I stopped for a drink.
Won't you have your cocktails here at home?
You said you were going to the doctor's.
I did go.
Well, I thought you'd be late.
Oh, not this late.
Is this going to be another session, Frida?
No, it's not going to be another session. Roger, we're growing apart, aren't we?
Oh, heaven's sake.
Now, please, Roger.
You'd stop treating me like a child. Do you know what someone called me today? Do you, Frida?
No.
Crummy. He called me crummy because I'm... Well, because I'm tied to your apron strings.
Oh, now, Roger.
How do you think I felt? Vice president. I signed my name to half a dozen letters, and that makes me a vice president. Oh, I'm sick of it.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? Did you marry me so you could push a button and have me come running?
Now, don't be absurd, Roger.
Why am I? Put yourself in my place.
I have put myself in your place. Tonight, while I was waiting for you.
What do you mean, Frida?
Well, I thought it'd be nice if we could spend the weekend at the lodge.
The mountain?
Yes, Roger.
Why?
Oh, we could talk things over.
Oh, why can't we talk it over now?
A weekend vacation together would be nice.
Oh, then you didn't have anything to talk over. It's only a ruse to get me up to the lodge.
No, it wasn't a ruse. You've been wanting to handle the advertising for the plant. I wanted to surprise you.
You mean you're turning the advertising over to me?
Yes.
I'll control the whole department, everything?
Everything.
Why, that's wonderful, darling. Of course it's a surprise, a charming surprise.
Does it make you happy, Roger?
Of course it does. Now I have something to do, or not something I can sink my teeth into.
Then will you go up to the lodge for the weekend?
Well, why don't you run up by yourself this time, Frida? You need the rest, you know, and I have something important to tend to.
I wanted you to go.
Of course you did, dear. But next time, Frida. Next time. I promise you. Frida's act was more considerate than she realized. Having access to some funds, I could pay Nick, write it off to advertising. For a moment, I felt almost kindly toward Frida. But then, as I stared at her, long and hard, wondering if I could care for her even remotely, my thoughts were revolted. I hated her for condescending to place me in charge of the advertising department. I knew I could no longer tolerate her, standing in the way of everything I was waiting for. Not until the next day did I conceive the plan. I was ready when Nick's bodyguard, Al, came into my office.
Nick sent me over.
I didn't think it was a social call.
I don't like jokes.
You're very businesslike, aren't you, Al?
I work for a living.
When you work hard. And when you play, you play hard. Is that right, Al?
That's right.
Could you use, say, 5,000 to play with?
I don't like chiselers.
Chiselers?
You heard me.
Oh, you think I'm trying to buy you off because of the money I owe Nick?
What am I supposed to think?
I see. Well, here's a check for Nick. What do you think now?
30 grand. How do I know this is good?
You're smarter than that, Al.
Okay. Okay, what's on?
What's 5,000 worth to you, Al?
Could be worth anything.
Maybe. Maybe.
Nick doesn't come in on this?
No. This is just between us.
How hard is it?
It may be a bit difficult.
For 10 grand, I might see you.
10,000?
Is it yes or is it no?
Well, I,
I don't know yet, Al. I'll give you a ring tomorrow at Nick's. I have to make some arrangements. Frida?
Yes, Roger?
Are you still planning to go to the mountains for the weekend?
No, not without you.
Well, I've been thinking, you do need a rest, you know.
Oh, I can rest just as well right here.
Yes, yes, I realize that, but, well, I thought I might come up to the lodge with you.
Oh, Roger, do you really mean it?
Of course, dear.
Oh, I'm so glad you decided to go with me.
Oh, there's just one thing, Frida.
Yes?
I won't be able to come up until later Saturday evening.
Oh, I don't mind driving up late.
But you don't understand, Frida. I expect you to drive up early.
Why, Roger?
Well, you can check over the repair work that needs to be done on the lodge.
Repair work?
Yes, I ran into an old friend of mine today, Frida, a carpenter, Al Graves. He's a bit down on his luck, and, you know, the lodge could stand some work.
Well, that's perfectly all right with me, Roger, but must I go up early?
Well, we don't want him hanging around, do we?
No, of course not.
Good, good. Then I'll ride up with Al. Now, when we get there, we can discuss the repairs. He'll look things over, and then he'll drive on back in his own car.
And you want me to go up early so I can make a list of the things to be done?
Yes, yes, Frida, that's it. Do you mind about the carpenter, I mean?
Of course I don't mind, Roger. I'm just so happy that you want to go.
That sounds like a full orchestra there. That doesn't sound like just an organ, Lisa.
I'm not responding to that because I'm not going to get on another inappropriate reel on that
one. I think that was a full orchestra. That was a mutual, but it's a mutual broadcasting. I think at the Mutual Network, they had a full orchestra and certain shows. This wasn't a big show, Murder by Experts. July 4th, 1949, Two Coffins to Fill with Carl Weber. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Psycho Killer. Talking Heads?
Yes.
Ha. Eh? Are you impressed, Lisa?
I kind of am.
Pretty impressed at that,
pretty
huh?
Pretty good.
Me too, actually. I'm pretty impressed.
You're impressed with yourself?
I impressed myself.
That's not a normal for you. That's typical Carl.
I was at a wedding yesterday.
Yeah.
And my cousin, Joey, is so funny. He says, he's hilarious. I said, how you doing? Because he goes, well, I'm good. I just can't wait for tomorrow. I said, why? He goes, because I get handsomer every day.
Didn't you say that to Elif tonight?
I know, I said it to Elif
you
today.
You stole
she
from your
up.
Cousin
oh,
Joey?
Yeah, but I'm giving him full credit for the joke.
Okay.
But I did say it to Elif, and she laughed.
She was just being nice.
I gave you the side eye with a little smirk.
Well, that's better than what I get from most women. So,
what do you get from most women?
Like one of these.
The hand. Don't talk to me. Leave. I get that a lot.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You know, so. what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
It's the second part of the show.
We got a Murder by Experts. But before we get into that, I just want to real quickly mention that I write for this national publication. It's called Remind Magazine. I am a nationally syndicated writer in this magazine here, Lisa.
Shocking.
And on the cover of the October issue is The Bride of Frankenstein. Although next month, November...
You know what? The November issue is already out.
It's already out,
I have
yeah.
It.
And yeah. Lisa subscribes to it. Mike subscribes to it. I think they have over 1 million people subscribing to this magazine. And it's terrific. I think our listeners would love it. It's called Remind Magazine. And there is all kinds of puzzles and crossword puzzles and trivia and classic comics and vintage advertisements. It's all articles about movies and TV, all about the good old days. And it's a full-color magazine. It's 8.5 by 11. And I write an article called Radio 360. I take a celebrity. In this one, it's Boris Karloff, and talk about his radio work. And so in the November issue, which is all about space, I talk about Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds. But I just wrote an article, because you have to do them ahead of time, I just wrote an article about Jimmy Stewart and his radio work, a ton of radio work, including the Six Shooter and some things on the Lux Theater. And I talk about his military career and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It's a great magazine. And they have a special offer for all of our listeners. If you go to the website, they have set up a special page at remindmagazine.com for our listeners. Remindmagazine.com. You can subscribe to this magazine at about 60% off the newsstand price. So do check it out, remindmagazine.com. Or if you go into any Barnes & Noble, they have these at every Barnes & Noble. You can just pick one up and leaf through it. I think you will really like it. All right. What I know you'll like is the conclusion to Murder by Experts. Here's the conclusion now to Two Coffins to Fill.
Thanks for the drink, Thornton.
You haven't answered my question, Al.
I'm thinking.
Thinking what?
Murder's quite a rap.
You had your proposition. If you want to forget it.
I didn't say that.
Then you'll do it.
When's the payoff?
$1,000 now. $9,000 Saturday night.
You want it done about 9 o'clock?
Just so it happens before I get there.
And I get a ride back with you.
Yes, yes.
Maybe you try to pull something like the cops.
I couldn't risk bringing the police in. You're smart enough to know that.
Smarter than you think, Thornton.
All right, now it has to look like a struggle and a robbery.
Leave that to me. Is everything okay with the wife for me to ride her up there?
It will be. Saturday morning.
Thornton residence?
Oh, Charles, this is Mr. Thornton.
Oh, good morning, sir.
May I speak to Mrs. Thornton?
Very well, sir. She's right here, sir.
Roger?
Oh, I was afraid you might have left for the lodge already.
No, not for an hour yet.
Frida, I wonder if you'd mind doing something.
What is it?
Well, Al Graves, the carpenter who is going to drive me up.
Yes?
His car is broken down. It's in the garage. Would you mind terribly taking Al up with you?
Oh, and Roger, really,
He could look over the repairs himself that way.
Well, when will you come up?
As soon as I'm finished working at the office. I'm working on the new advertising program.
Well, I suppose I could have Richard take Al and myself up in the sedan.
Oh, you don't have to bother Richard. Why not take your convertible?
Oh, couldn't we have that carpenter come up some other time, Roger?
All right. Let's just forget the whole thing, Frida, if you wish. You can go on up alone.
Now, Roger, you know that...
Now, things must always go your way.
Well, you'll drive up in your car?
Yes. Al can use it to return to town.
Well, all right. Where'll I pick him up?
On the corner of Hawthorne and Orange.
Hawthorne and Orange?
Yes, I'll tell him to watch for the convertible.
All right, Roger. I'll see you at the lodge tonight, darling.
Things for the past few days had moved so amazingly fast and remarkably well that I had little time to reflect upon my emotions. Frida's surprising agreement to my wishes, I knew, was merely a new tack in her attempt to draw me closer to her. And yet, as I drove through the lane to the lodge in the evening, I had an unaccountable fear. The wind whined through the trees, and the eerie sound disturbed me. I parked the car and sat for a few moments watching the lights in the lodge. It was 10 o'clock. Al should have been finished long ago. I got out of the car, walked to the veranda, and opened the door.
You finally got here.
Yes.
Well, how does it look? You satisfied?
I said to make it look like a struggle.
Don't it?
I guess it's all right.
You got the dough.
Where is she?
In the bedroom. Go in, take a look. Turn on the light.
No, I can see.
Satisfied, Thornton?
She's partly under the bed.
Yeah, she got scared. She tried to hide. I had to follow her.
Shut the door. I said to shut the door.
You're a funny guy.
Why?
You figure all this out and can't stomach your own stuff.
Let's sit down and have a drink, huh?
Sure. You got the dough?
Yes, sure. There should be some glasses here.
On that shelf.
Yes, I see. I'll fix the drinks.
When I get that drink, we're gonna blow.
Where's her car?
Garage. Want to see it?
No. Here you are.
You need it worse than I do, Thornton.
Where'll you go from here, Al?
A trip, maybe.
Well, you have nothing to worry about from me.
That I know, Thornton.
How was it? How was it done?
Gun.
Did you leave it?
I'll get rid of it.
Well, here's to you, Al.
Yeah. All right, Thornton. Now let's have the dough.
Certainly. I've got it right here.
You know, I've been thinking about you, Thornton. I think Nick's right. You're crummy.
Oh, now, you shouldn't feel that way, Al.
I had to do it over...
You won't.
Say, I'm sick. What'd you put in that drink?
Why, nothing, Al.
You double-crossing, I'll kill you, Al.
Will you, Al?
I poured some of the liquor on Al and dipped the bottle over. Then I carried him out of the lodge, across the carpet of pine needles, to the bluff 100 yards away. I placed one of Frieda's expensive bracelets in his pocket, along with some money and articles of lesser value. I dropped him over the bluff and heard his body strike the rocky stream bed 300 feet below. I went quickly to my car and drove away.
I drove rapidly for an hour till I passed an all-night diner. I wheeled the car around in the highway, pointing it back in the direction I'd come. Then I ran the car into a ditch hard. The front fender crumpled against the wheel and the tire blew out. I couldn't have wished anything better. This was it, my alibi. I walked a mile up the road to the diner. As I opened the door, a car pulled up. When I entered the cafe, a girl got out of the car and followed me in.
Where'll it be, folks?
Coffee, please.
And you, mister?
Coffee. Say, is there a tow truck around?
Tow truck?
I blew out a tire and went into the ditch about a mile down the road.
And Jim Parson has a tow truck. But him and the missus went into L.A. Won't be back till Monday.
Here you are, miss.
Monday. Yes. Wreck your car bad?
Smashed the wheel. I don't have a spare.
Oh, that's too bad. Going far?
My lodge, about 50 miles up. The Thornton place. Roger Thornton. Maybe you know it.
Thornton? No, can't say I do.
My wife's there. But I'm sure she's all right.
You don't stand much of a chance of getting a ride going that way this time of night.
I suppose not.
You could use a phone there, reverse the charges.
Oh, no, the phone's disconnected up at the lodge.
You might be able to hitch to L.A. Once in a while, there's a car going that way.
Oh, that's an idea.
Anything else for you, miss?
No, thanks. How much?
10 cents. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
I reckon the young lady didn't want a passenger.
Yeah, so it seems. Say, I think I will use your phone.
Help yourself.
Have you got that straight, Charles?
Yes, sir. I'm to call the auto club and have them pick up your car.
It's quite a way to the lodge, so I'm going to try to get a ride back to town.
Were you hurt, sir?
Oh, I'm perfectly all right. It may be rather late before I get in, so leave a light in the library.
Very well, sir.
Good night, Charles.
Is that all, sir?
Why, yes. Yes, that's all.
Very well, sir.
Thank you for the use of the phone.
No, that's okay, mister.
Could you use a drink?
I ain't never been known to turn one down.
I got a bottle in my car.
Oh, that's quite a walk.
It's nice out, and I could use a drink myself.
Suit yourself.
You don't mind if I sit around after I get back? Maybe I can pick up a ride.
Glad to have you. I'm open all night.
Good, good. I'll be right back.
Mister?
Yes?
Did you say you wanted a ride to L.A.?
Why, yes, if you're going that way.
Hop in.
Well, thank you very much.
I would have asked you in there, but I didn't want to give the counterman the wrong idea, Mr. Thornton.
How did you know my name?
You told the counterman.
Oh. Oh, of course. I was just going to get a bottle out of my car.
I already got it.
You got it?
Sure. Nice car, thirsty girl. I had a hunch.
How long were you with the car?
Long enough to find the bottle and see your name on the steering post.
I thought you heard me tell the counterman.
I did. So then I knew you was a gentleman.
Have you drunk much of that bottle?
Enough.
Hey, you shouldn't be driving if you've been drinking too much.
Scared?
Oh, no, it's for your own good.
I'm celebrating.
You might have waited till you got in Los Angeles.
Mr. Thornton.
Yes?
Why'd you turn your car around and run it into that ditch?
What?
I know all about you, Mr. Thornton.
Who are you? What's your name?
Della.
Della what?
Just Della.
Look out! You nearly turned us over. Either stop this car and let me drive, or...
Or what, Mr. Thornton?
Stop this car.
When we get to Nick's.
Did you say Nick's?
I'm Al's girlfriend.
No.
Didn't you think Al could have a girlfriend?
Why did you pick me up?
Because I'm not half as tight as you think I am.
Then, what do you want?
Al was a punk, a nice punk, but punks come cheap, Mr. Thornton. I want that $9,000.
Do you think I'd carry that kind of money around?
And did you think Al was stupid enough not to have somebody cover him at the lodge?
You were there? You saw it?
Yes, I was there, and I saw.
You're a very brave girl, Della. Threatening me?
I don't scare easy. I know your kind.
Oh, do you?
This is a gun, Mr. Thornton. I'm not afraid to use it.
You're a very stupid child.
If you try anything, I'll wreck this car.
Watch that curve. I'll take that gun. Now, stop that car or I'll kill you.
No, you won't.
I'll hold that wheel.
Let go. Let go of me. Let go.
We're stopping right here. All right. All right. Now, get out of the car. Get out.
I'm willing to talk to you.
Get out.
My arm.
Now, down this ravine.
I was only kidding you. I wanted to scare you. I didn't mean it.
Must I force you?
I won't tell nobody.
You're my only witness. My only witness.
Please, let me tell you. Let me talk to you.
This will do.
Wait! You've got to let me explain it.
When the girl told me she'd seen me kill Al, I went out of my head. I didn't know what I was doing. I shouldn't have killed her. I was stupid, but I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop. I drove the girl's car into town and left it on a side street. I dropped the gun down a sewer and caught a bus home. It was almost daylight. I was tired and sick. But it was all over. It was all over. I unlocked the front door and quietly entered the house. My house. I was too keyed up for sleep. All I needed was a bracer. I went into the library.
Good morning, Roger.
Rita!
Who did you expect?
Rita, what are you doing here?
I've been waiting since you telephoned Charles.
I killed them.
What?
I killed them both.
You killed him?
Al and the girl, and you're here. You're right here.
Stop it. Stop it, Roger. Roger, stop it. I'm so sorry for you.
I had it all figured out. I did. I had...
That man, Al, the carpenter, he told me everything, Roger. I had to pay him.
You paid him? You? And it was the girl I saw. She was in the bedroom, pretending to be you, pretending to be dead. Al framed the whole thing as a shakedown. He never intended to kill you.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you.
You said that. You said that. Who are you to feel sorry for me?
I love you. I'm going to miss you, Roger.
Love? Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't know. I stayed home hoping you'd come here and we could talk things over before you did anything rash.
Rash? You call it rash. Do you know what I've done?
That's why I'm so sorry for you.
You say that once more. Once more, Frieda.
It was greed, wasn't it, Roger? Greed for my money.
I hate you, Frieda.
I know. And I love you. Isn't it strange, Roger?
It's pathetic.
What I wanted to tell you at the lodge, Roger. Or if I'd only told you sooner.
What do you mean? Frieda, what do you mean?
I'll tell you. But it's too late now, Roger. You've killed two people. And you'll hang. I let you.
What are you doing with that gun?
I haven't any money, Roger. I've been wiped out. That's what I wanted to tell you. You needn't have killed them.
No, Fred. No.
But I still love you.
No. No.
And I won't let you hang. Goodbye, Roger.
And so the curtain falls on two coffins to fill, which was chosen by guest expert Kelly Rose, whose latest mystery is Murder in Any Language. This is your host, John Dixon Carr, hoping you'll be with us next week at this time.
In the cast of Two Coffins to Fill, which was written by Robert Foster, were Carl Weber, Eleanor Phelps, Jimmy Stevens, Miriam Wolfe, and Maurice Tarplin. Music was under the direction of Emerson Buckley and was composed by Richard DuPage. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in our story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. This is Phil Tonkin speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's Murder by Experts. Hope you enjoyed that. July 4th, 1949, Two Coffins to Fill, starring Carl Weber. And the host was John Dixon Carr, very famous mystery writer, as heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, Lisa, next weekend is our annual Halloween program. And we have some terrific radio shows lined up for next Saturday and Sunday. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with the Cubs. I don't know if we're going to be bumped a little bit or not. But if we are here for the full 3 hours on Saturday, on October 29th, and the full 3 hours on Sunday, I can tell you, first of all, on Sunday, Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske will be here to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And if you haven't sent in your photograph of your kitty, you should do that right away, because we're going to give away another year's supply next week. So send a picture of you and your kitty cat along with your kitty cat's name and your city and state, and send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. You'll automatically be entered into that drawing, and you could be a winner.
I also wanted to mention, next weekend we will be giving tickets away to see Tony and Tina's wedding.
Okay.
And our own Brian Noonan from WGN will be in it. He plays Vinny, I believe, in the show. And we will be giving away three sets of tickets for that as well.
He is terrific in it.
He is.
All right, so next Saturday and Sunday, as I said, if we're here from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning, we have six awesome Halloween programs for you. We're going to tune in to The Screen Director's Playhouse. We'll hear The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, a terrific show where they visit a haunted house. You're going to love that. Then we have The Mysterious Traveler. And then we have Mystery House, starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine, in a show called The Thirsty Death. You will love it. It's super scary. Then it's Lights Out and Inner Sanctum Mysteries. We are going to get you good next Saturday and Sunday here on the WGN Radio Theater with our annual Halloween show. You're going to be here, Lisa?
I will be
here.
Are you going to be here, Carl?
Yeah, you going to dress up?
I always dress up.
I mean, you going to wear a costume?
What kind of costume?
And then I think there's the WGN
Halloween party.
Halloween
is on Monday, but we still haven't figured out our attire.
Yeah.
We need something fun.
Well, a listener a couple of weeks ago thought we should be Sonny and Cher. I think that's a great idea.
Well, I don't look like Cher, so I would need some assistance on that one.
No, I'm playing Cher.
Oh, you want to
be Cher.
Cher,
and you're going to be Sonny.
Oh.
That's how I thought we'd do it. I think that'd be more interesting.
It would be interesting.
Or we could be like half Sonny and half Cher. You know, like half of
our... Okay, you're...
What do you think?
Straight.
I don't know. Well, anyway.
Okay.
All right, so make sure you're with us next week here for the WGN Radio Theater, because we are going to be here, and we're going to be playing some great Halloween shows. One of my favorite times of the year is Halloween.
Me too.
And then we're going to be here on Thanksgiving. Lisa and I are going to be on the air here on WGN on a Thursday night.
Yes.
On Thanksgiving.
On Halloween, Thanksgiving.
I think it's 9 to 11. November 28th, I think it is.
November 28th
we'll
on Thursday.
We'll be here from 9 o'clock to 11. We have two Halloween shows.
Thanksgiving shows.
Wait, what the heck am I saying?
We'll be here on Thanksgiving and we'll play Thanksgiving shows.
What would I do without you, Lisa?
You know what?